Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Ramsey Paul about the absurdity of the Western world right now. The ongoing, of course, cultural issues of the problems, basically, that we're facing in the world right now, and the fact that so few people are actually willing to recognize what actually is going on here. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about how to make this a moral issue. That's one of the problems here that I've seen, in a way, is to try to communicate to people that this is actually about trying to avoid conflict. It's about trying to avoid, violence on the streets, and that the path that we're on right now is actually creating so many issues and so much. I mean, just look at the money and the court fees and all the things. We linked up a couple of videos the other day there about various rioting from around in the Western world because of these issues. Because in this particular case, and also it's not only applicable to Muslims, of course, but in this case, I chose to focus on that issue alone because it has something to do with the fact that the West has a tradition of, for example, free speech and wanting to say what we want to say. We want to make fun about things. We criticize things, and this very much, of course, clashes with the values of the Muslims, who got furious as some of these artists have made fun of their prophet and things like that. So it's like, it's a diametrically opposed scenario, and yet we're expected to somehow kind of bend backwards to respect their values, but we cannot, they cannot, they're not going to accept our values because of, with the free speech and everything. So my point here is that this is creating a lot of conflict. It's creating a lot of violence in the world, unnecessarily so, of course, but this makes it then, in my view, a moral issue. It's actually an issue of protection. How do we keep people, safe, because these cultural conflicts are going on? Is that something you've thought about, Ramsey, in terms of how we can tell people that the reasoning why we're on this page is because it's actually creating conflict and violence on the street, and that's what we're trying to avoid?
Oh, yeah. I think the moral issue is the most important thing. We got to show that we're the good guys, because, again, I think as a people, we want to do the right thing. We want to be the good guys. And so the message is simple, is that everyone has a right to exist and to live, and everyone has a right to self-determination or culture. Doesn't mean that's one's superior or inferior. That's why I hate that supremacist, supremacist. Well, I don't want to be supreme to anyone. I just want you to have your own culture. So, I did some work in Malaysia, and that's a Muslim country. And that's fine, with me. It belongs there in a Muslim country, and Europe doesn't belong there. It needs to be separate. So, that's the way we can keep the harmony with everyone. So, and sadly, the violence tends to be just one way. I at least pretty much, I haven't seen many anti-Muslim riots where a bunch of Muslims are killed in Europe. I mean, that would create some, that'd be be huge news if that would happen. But so it's we have a right to live, and we have a right to our life, but it's going to require more. We have to be able to stand up for it, right? Because that's just a law of nature. If we're not willing to stand up for ourselves, and we'll be wiped out and killed. That's just how the humanity has always been. So if we think what we have and our people is worth preserving, then we need to be willing to stand up and have some courage and just say, well, I'm not ashamed to be white. I'm not going to wear a white armband, just like I wouldn't expect that of you. See, just by saying that is a little bit of courage. And if more people did that, all the leftists, they'd be playing this game, a gigantic, what I call whack-a-mole. You know what whack-a-mole is?
Sure.
Carnival game.
Yep.
And they can try to keep people down as long as not many people pop up. You speak your mind and they destroy that person. That's kind of a symbol. But if too many people pop up, again, like, I think they're really a minority, and then they're going to be out of control, and then they're worried, because they'd be worried they're the ones that be hunted. So that's why we just need some people to have some courage to stand up and say, hey, I don't hate other people, but I'm not going to hate my people. That's, in fact, an immoral position. This whole white privilege conference is immoral. We need to frame it in that way. I joke about it, but it is. It's just horrible to tell a white kid that they're intrinsically evil because of their race. Really a wicked position, and we need to stand for that.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw that. I was amazed by that. Wow. It's just like, this is telling them that they're evil because of their, how can that not be racism? It is racism, right? So, I mean, it's this one way street again. What, you apply a certain standard to, to everyone else, and then one to the white European people, So
it's definitely anti-white. It's not anti. See, they define racism as just something white people do. That's how they
exactly
define it.
Yeah. Otherwise they call it what, reverse racism?
I just call it, I don't use the term race. There's that saying anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. And, yep. And that's true. That's all it is.
Sure.
So I just like to use the term anti-white, pro-white, anti-black, pro-black. I'm pro every race. That's what I am. I'm not anti any race. So
yeah.
I don't use the term racism. I consider it, if you use that term, typically you're just anti-white.
Absolutely. Now, back to the cultural Marxists again. I talk a little bit about that and the people who have a religious idea. Sometimes it differs. Don't necessarily want to generalize here, but I guess there's maybe some people who are generally think that it will be one, you know, happy, you know, paradise at some point when everyone is, you know, the same and thinks the same and looks the same and everything else in the future or something like that. But the fact is, do you think that they don't understand, for example, the clashes of cultural values and differences that their religions in themselves are actually designed to be, you know, not necessarily diametrically oppositional to each other, but you have that issue of some of the Abrahamic religions and, you know, Islam mm-hmm. as well is a big part of that in terms of that, you know, the disbelievers are something to be not respected, if I should put it mildly and lightly. So do you think they don't understand that there actually are those issues there at the base level of some of these religions, and they just think, we'll oversee that. It will work out, right? We have to just take a couple of hard hits here now for a few generations, but eventually it'll be nice and peaceful. Is that what they think? Do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different people. There's some that take that long-term approach that are really just wicked people. And then there's a lot of people that a lot of the politicians, they kind of have the philosophy in the long run, we're all dead anyway. And so they just top on board what's ever going to get them elected right now. So if saying politically correct stuff is going to get them elected and get them favorable media coverage, they may not really believe it in their heart of hearts, right? But they're a politician. They're going to say it because they know, you know, I can't speak out against certain groups or certain countries. Otherwise, I'm going to get bad press. I understand the score here. I know how things are really run. And I want this because I want the power. So they play the game, not because they really believe it, but they're a little bit more cynical. And at least here in the United States, can't speak for Europe, but a lot of politicians are very cynical. And they'll do what they can to get elected. So I think there's a lot of that too. I think there are some true believers, but it's kind of like the old communism and the Soviet Union. The true believers are far and few between, unless you're just young or mentally retarded or something. There's not that many. It's mostly people are doing it for, I think, cynical reasons.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? What do you think the driving issues behind that is? I mean, we've talked about some of it already, but are there some, I mean, is it based on a self-hate as well? Do you think that it's like they've been mind controlled and conditioned in this kind of, you know, hating themselves because of who they are or, you know, their ancestors or whatnot. So they sincerely want to eradicate themselves and everyone like them. Is that the driving force there?
Well, I think a lot of the driving force is, again, religious, and I don't mean religion, meaning believe in God type of thing, but religion in that we're all equal before God, and that was kind of like a big Christian concept that eventually came about, and actually from Luther, right, that we don't need a hierarchy between man and God, we're all equal.
Yep.
And that kind of flowed into that thought flowed into you know, the English Civil War, then that flowed into the French Revolution, and then obviously the Bolshevik Revolution. And it continues to this day, the whole idea of equality, that we're all equal and we could have this equality of mankind. And if we just eliminate things like race and cultures and so forth, this would be all a good thing. I think they see white nations as being the biggest threat to that. And so that's why there's a goal to eliminate white nations. So I don't think they would ever tolerate any nation just being, you know, a white nation. That's, you know, an African nation they don't care about, but a white nation they'd have an issue with.
Right, exactly. But it's very, I mean, it's tremendously historically myopic to have this view, right? I mean, to seriously think and believe that, I don't know how far back we should go, but I mean, maybe possibly hundreds of thousands of years, at least, you know, 80, 60,000 years of a certain development and the fact that we've been living in different parts of the world, that we just can override that because of a, you know, fantasy in, you know, one, two generations. I mean, that's, That's I can't even begin to wrap my head around that, how they think, you know.
Yeah, and it doesn't work. And it's built on the false premise that everyone's the same, which we know. I mean, genetically, people aren't the same. And it's, I don't know why you would think that of humans. You don't see that with animals. I love dogs. And you don't think a greyhound is the same as a Doberman Pinscher. They're different breeds. They have different qualities. Doesn't mean that one's superior to the other. They're just different. And humans became different, too, because of, you know, how areas were raised. Europeans in the north, where you were very ice area, versus the Africans and more of a tropical. That's why our evolutionary were different, with different physical characteristics.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there are phenotypes that's recognized and acknowledged. But you see, a lot of this has to do with faulty science now as well. Not necessarily maybe the science, but the way that they're trying to skew and use the science in their own advantage, right? But I think most people who look at it honestly and fairly will realize this as well. And there are a couple of people speaking out about this, like I think Frank Salter, the geneticist. We're going to try to get him on the program as well, who speaks about this from this point of view, that it's part of our genetic makeup. It's just part of, if you will, then human nature and biology. It's just a fact. And to perceive that we can just override this because we have some delusional fantasy about how we would like the world to be, that is very much a religious idea right there. It's based on belief and faith and not, empirical evidence, right?
Right. I mean, just open your eyes, if nothing else. I mean, it's easier for me to believe literally in leprechauns. I mean, because I've never seen a leprechaun. I don't think they exist. 99.999% sure they don't. But maybe, you know, there could be a leprechaun in Ireland or something, right? It's easier for me to believe in that than it is for me to believe in quality, because I see people. I'm not just talking between the races. Just there's no two people the same. They have different abilities. They have different talents. People are not equal. There is no equality. It's a nice thought, right? Everyone likes the thought of equality, but people aren't equal. And so to try to make everyone that's everything has to be equal, and if there's differences, it's because of racism. This is ridiculous. For example, most of the basketball players in the United States are black. It's not because of racism necessarily against white people. It's just there's different genetic abilities they have, same way that Asians do a lot better in reading than Africans. It may not be racism, right? Because, I mean, they're two different races, are not even white, but they have different abilities. So if you just accept there's differences between the races and between the genders, getting back to feminism, it makes things a lot easier to accept how the reality is. So mostly it's just, I look at culture Marxists, they're waging war on reality, but reality always wins. You can't fake reality. It's just how it is.
Oh my God. It's amazing. To a certain extent, I can't believe we're having this conversation. That's how absurd it is, you know, but
yeah, and it makes for great material for my videos. Cause every exactly, time I put this stuff, I'm like, wow, it looks like I read stuff and I think, oh, this must be from The Onion. This has to be satire. Like, no, they really believe this. You know? So.
Oh, amazing. I mean, I like the differences. I like to be able to travel and see different cultures, you know, but it's like, we don't have any Swedish meatballs and herrings anymore. It's all kebab shops and pizza places practically all over the place now. And I mean, again, as I mentioned before, London, if you think about that, see, this is the thing. That's the lie of diversity. It's actually destroying diversity. It's just creating a monoculture. Okay, granted, there is this potential oppositional idea to this, which is the non-assimilation part, right? So you actually have kind of a little bit of two. I haven't made up my mind yet exactly where this is, or made up my mind, but fully seen where this actually is going. One half of me thinks that, okay, well, if they don't assimilate, we're just going to basically get small groupings within these countries, and it's going to get, basically like we're going to be back to kind of like a tribal warfare scenario, or it's all at some point later on in the future all going to be the one and the same, and it's going to kind of erode those differences and cultural traits and nuances. What do you see there? Where is this developing to, do you think?
Yeah, I've noticed when I was in Europe how it's become, for a lack of a better word, Americanized. It's just, you know, I was in Hungary, and then it's just English is spoken everywhere now, and all the American shows and the celebrities. It's becoming very genericized across that, and that's really sad to lose all the heritage there. But I see that's where that's going among the global scale. It doesn't mean people are assimilating. They're still going to have the conflict. It's just that culture is being lost. So it's just sad to see.
Well, definitely. Exactly. And I always think that a kind of a rootless human being, they don't have the anchoring of their tradition and their past, their ancestors' beliefs and everything else. I've encountered some people as well who are just kind of literally just say, you know, fuck culture, you know, fuck heritage. Huh. I don't give a shit about that. You know, it's all beneath. It's a, you know, it's like, it's something, but again, it's like, it's, I was like, wow, well, I wonder what their grandparents would say about that, or their grandparents who fought, who toiled in the field with blood and sweat to make sure that you and your people survived, and that you're in the position that you are right now to even be able to, you know, sit on your, you know, front of your computer desk on your, you know, computer and talk about these things the way you do. And it's like, it's a complete lack of veneration and respect for what your own people that did for you so that you could even be here and be who you are. And that lack of respect kind of scares me a little bit, the way they've been severed from all of that, you know?
Right. And it doesn't mean that people can't change and technology changes, and that's good, and that happens. But it's the same thing, as you said, is to respect where you came from and to keep your identity, which I think is important for people. Because, you know, we're a social animal. Like it or not, we're not meant to just be on our own. We're with a group. We're with a neighborhood. We're with a community. And that's a good thing. And it's a good thing for other races. It should be a good thing for our race. And it doesn't mean that we're always stuck in the past. I mean, you can look back in the past, you know, it's not like just because you're Scottish, you always have to be playing a bagpipe or something, but, you know, you can look back at your roots and, you know, it's kind of like the Indians here. I mean, it's funny how people think Oklahoma Indians still live in teepees. Like, no, they drive four-wheel drive vehicles and, you know, just like regular people, but they still respect their heritage. And that's an important thing, I think, to keep. And I hope like Sweden, they're able to do that. They're in the modern world, but hopefully keep your heritage of where you came from.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't seem like that. I mean, the Vikings have been a hugely neglected part of our heritage. And it's not only the Vikings. It's the people who came before that. We have a couple of, you know, thousands of years of development that led up to that particular age. And they, mm-hmm. it was not all raping and pillaging either, people. It was actually, you know, proud, you know, merch. The ship development was just astonishing. Right. The sword technology was just... the finest that Europe had seen. I think nothing like it for 800 years showed up again. And the, you know, navigation and trade routes, and it was a lot, you know, a lot of trade they did too, you know. So it's, sure. But all that has been kind of, we've turned our back on that. And I've been trying to bring that back a little bit in some of the radio shows that we've been doing and get people to realize that, look at it again. It's something, it's part of you. It's part of who you are. Don't turn your back on that. It's really important. You'll find something there. And that goes for all people around the world, that as soon as they connect with that again and see, you know, through the lies of the globalist culture that's been handed down, the corporate, you know, BS with the socialist overtones to everything, that's has destroyed all that. And I think there's a tremendous value in finding yourself again in that cultural heritage, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm on the right, but I love true diversity. I love to go to, say, Japan and see the Japanese culture. I'd love to go to Hungary and see the older Hungarian culture, even though that's not my heritage. I love to see that. And I think nationalism preserves that diversity of people throughout the world. And I think that's really cool because I like that.
Definitely, I agree. So how would you say that we tackle some of the issues of piercing through the religious programming, for example? Obviously, what you're doing alone is that effort of doing the videos, trying to get people to see, open their eyes to some of this stuff that's going on. But I guess for other people out there as well, you know, there's always something that someone can do by just beginning to talk about it, to point it out to their, you know, friends and relatives and, you know, anyone who you can, basically, to try to bring the attention and kind of and pop the illusionary bubble that we have around us right now, right?
Yeah, I think the best way is just to laugh at it. I mean, again, that's what the left hates. They hate to be laughed at, and they're little, because they have their little holy things they believe in. If you just mock it, that's the best way. And the left, you should do that to the right. Here in America in the 70s, we had someone called Norman Lear, and he created a lot of television shows that attack traditional Western values. But he didn't do it like a Trotsky in some boring long hour-long, you know, rant. He made funny comedies that parodied white people and made kind of fun of them, but it was in a funny way that normal people would watch and laugh, but he was getting his message across in a non-threatening way. And I think that's the way to do it, is just to interact with people, you know, not be some kook, but just be a normal person and be able to laugh at some of this stuff, because it is funny, and they hate to be laughed at, but that's what I do, laugh at them.
Exactly. Now, I was reminded of, I guess, some of Saul Alinsky's and his book Rules for Radicals. So it's like the prime weapon, I guess, that they could use is ridicule other, you know, men. So it's kind of in that vein as well.
Yes,
they've been doing that for a long time, you know, and they've also, of course, controlled the dialogue in the media. They've obviously, if we look at Hollywood in itself, the way that the tremendous one-sidedness that there is in that particular media outlet, and people are getting, you know, programmed by that. They're getting entrained, and young people too. And I think a lot of more people have to get in on those kinds of levels of creating art, right? Creating movies and getting into the even music and all kinds of things to get into a sensibility here when it comes to controlling the narrative and also the dialogue of where things are heading. You know, that's, I see that as important anyway.
Yeah, we're kind of fun now because, like, on the right now, we're kind of like the counter-revolutionaries. We're the edgy people that, you know, kids grow up being, you know, politically correct, and we're like the, oh, these guys are naughty. I shouldn't even look at them. But some of the best compliment I ever got is the guy said, you know, or this girl, I shouldn't like your stuff at all. I disagree with you politically, but I just can't stop watching you. I really love it. And that's, you know, some of the best compliment I ever received. And so if we can be that way, so even people that may not agree with us, if we can present ourselves in such a way that's not threatening, it's kind of fun, that's goes a long way to changing points of view. Because again, I believe what we stand for is natural. It's just a natural not to hate your kind. It's really weird. The whole white privilege thing is really a perversion that's unnatural. So if just people are natural, they can see that, no, you know, I shouldn't have to be my own kind of stupid. And you make fun of it, and people don't want to be laughed at. So I think that's the way to go.
Definitely. Well, exactly. And it's a good point. It's not always about agreeing with everything. That's not it. I mean, people should be able to see through the issues that this is about the absurdity and pointing out the BS in all of this. I mean, because the consequences here are horrifying. They're dangerous too, actually, in that regard, if we don't speak up about these kinds of things in time. But the fact that this is now being, you know, used against you, we've talked about that in other shows, how political correctness has been weaponized and it's using to, you know, to steer people in a certain direction. Your life is no longer your own. This is all about, you know, social engineering and get people to think a certain way about themselves and whatnot. This kind of mentality is destroying lives. I mean, look at the self-hate that this has produced in some people. That's how can people not speak up about this, even if they agree with it or not? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I read a book about Napoleon, and his mother used to always tell kids back then, for girls, the most important thing was to be virtuous. And as a boy, the most important thing was to be brave. And that doesn't mean being crazy and doing, you know, dumb things, but it means standing based on what you believe in. And if you're not willing to stand up because, oh, I may get in trouble if someone hears me say that, well, then you probably, you know, and your kind don't deserve to live, right? Because our ancestors, they had to take risks. And they took a lot more risks than what we face. I mean, someone get mad at me now. You know, the person that founded this country, George Washington, it looked hopeless. He was going to hang. It looked like he was going to die. He knew that, but he took the risk. So if you're not willing to take a risk to stand up, I don't know the answer. You got to be willing to be able to stand up for your beliefs.
Exactly. Yeah. I think people have this perception that they're somehow outside of the realm of reality or nature now, and it's all driven by our social social constructs or something like that. And eventually this is not going to work in the long run. And I think that your point is very poignant there in terms of speaking out about this and daring to resist it, for the fact that we want to try to overcome the threshold of that many people put upon themselves. I mean, I think that self-censorship has to be one of the worst types of censorship that there is, I think. And that's, I think that's the majority where we see things. That people, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, I agree with you, but I'm not going to say anything because I'm afraid to be, you know, called something.
Exactly. You know? It's just like, and it's fun. And I, you know, I'm telling guys, if you do that, you get a lot of people that are interested in you and they respect you. And then versus being a wuss and just, you know, doing the politically correct line. And so there's a lot of advantages to doing it. Yeah, there's some risk, but it's a lot of fun. And hey, the way I look at it, death is a great liberator. It really is, because no matter what, I'm going to be dead, you know, 50 years from now anyway, right? So I can't keep this anyway. So what are you going to do with your life? You have a short time span. Are you just always going to live your life in fear? I mean, what's the worst they can do? Kill me? Well, I'm going to die anyway in the future. So it liberates you. The whole idea of death, I think, liberates you. So at least with me. Not trying to be morbid. That's kind of my philosophy.
Exactly. Yeah, that's good. Now, I just want to explain as well to people that this is like the, what we're talking about here is that the resisting the establishment and the main narrative here, folks. I mean, again, this is something we've been doing on this radio show since its inception, of trying to point out not only, you know, the actual, you know, geopolitical conspiracies and everything else that's going on in the world, but the way that this kind of discussion has transformed itself over the last few years. And that this is, I mean, if you want to resist and if you want to be a rebel, you know, this is it, folks. This is what you have to speak up against, you know. And again, it's a betrayal towards yourself, I think, as well, to not do anything about it if you indeed see it, and if you indeed realize what we're talking about here, and then kind of turning your back on that and saying, "Eh, I choose to be comfortable." But you're absolutely right. I mean, our ancestors didn't survive because they decided to be comfortable. They got off their asses and they got the job done. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So that's what this is about. Now, let me ask you another thing. I saw a couple of videos here the other day about a situation in Dearborn, Michigan. And I was really surprised by that. I didn't know that there's been a kind of a no-go zone for Christians. Have you seen or heard anything of the material there in terms of the increasing Muslim population in Michigan, Dearborn?
I've known that Dearborn has been, a lot of Muslims have been there. I haven't seen that specific video. And that's something that's not as... It's kind of new to America. We've not had the problem with the Islamic immigration like Europe has had. So, but yeah, I'm not surprised.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? In the same regard there, when the government narrative is, you know, talking about, you know, Muslim extremists and all these kinds of things, right? And then if to me, it feels like people are creating a schizophrenic relationship to these kinds of issues. I mean, personally, I don't believe in the official story of 9/11, for example. I think that there's more to it there. There's a whole, you know, slew of research and all those kinds of things. But nonetheless, if we look at that from the point of view that, okay, Muslims did it, they pulled it off, and then at the same time, they're being told that, no, you can't be, you know, afraid of Muslims, right? That's Islamophobic. And then at the same time, they're kind of hyping this terror issue all the time. Terror, watch out, you know, kind of thing. So it's creating a schizophrenic relationship, I think, within people in terms of how they relate to these kinds of issues and the world. And this is not the only case. It's happening in other scenarios as well. And I think that that's been very efficient for them to actually being able to control the narrative and actually tell people what to think about certain things, because people can no longer rationally think about these things. They can no longer break down what they actually, in a rational sense, what they're supposed to think about the events that goes on in the world. So I don't know if you've noticed that, or even if you have looked into some of the things regarding 9/11 and all that kind of stuff, but it's very interesting to me of how they're creating a different type of psychological outlook towards the world with the aid of the media and entertainment and education and all these things, right?
Yeah, it is interesting. And it's like they want to try to make Muslims into good Muslims, but I guess there are some, but they're trying to, like, Christianity, most Europe may be official Christian, but most people don't follow it. I think they want to do the same thing with Muslims and hope that they don't really follow their dictums, because it is a conflict, right? Because all of Europe is now into all this gay rights and all this. Well, Muslims aren't really going to respect that very much. In fact, they execute homosexuals. So there's going to be a conflict here, guys.
Oh, boy.
Warning them. I mean, which is more important to you, your gay rights or your having Muslim immigrants? Because it's going to be a conflict. I think they're trying to hope that they can, through MTV or whatever, change Muslims so, you know, they still may wear the headscarf, but they don't really believe in their values. I don't know. I want to bet on that, though. So there's really a clash of civilizations, that's for sure.
Exactly. Straight out of Huntington's book there, you know. So
I stole the phrase, yes.
Yeah. So it's a poignant point again there, bringing out the fact that the left in most cases, and Sweden again actually is a prime example of this, how a lot of the feminists and the socialists have embraced Muslims, and they seem to vehemently despise and hate all the Christians in the country, but they love Islam, you know, for some reason. And it's like, wait a minute, are you guys not seeing what's actually going on here? And the fact that this is something that's going to end up biting you in the hiney afterwards, you know? And do you sincerely believe that they will be able to change people? I mean, I think religion and culture are strong because they are real, right? They are they are part of us. Therefore, I think they're not going to be able to change those things. Ergo, we're going to get problems here, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they will in all degrees. I think that's their goal, though, is just to try to get it so that the Muslims are one day like Christians, where they maybe officially believe it, but not really. They don't act on it. So I don't think they're going to have that much success in that, though, because the Muslims seem to be a lot more devout that way. But the
Exactly.
Christians were at one time too, right? But so who knows?
Yeah, it's a kind of an interesting, I think, a time if you compare the timeline. I don't know what the Islamic calendar is like in the 14 or 1500s now, I think, or something like that. It's kind of like when the period when the Christians were going through their expansion phase as well.
Yeah,
And so,
there's about a 500-year difference. You're correct. Yeah,
exactly. So
so.
it's very bizarre how that works out, but nonetheless, it shows that. So again, the contradiction here, I want to try to point out to people that. Okay, they can oppose the Christian expansion phase, but they're all fine with it when it occurs in the Muslim realm, right? You know, so it's like I thought you were against it. So why aren't you against this particular another version of colonization? The difference here, though, is of course that we're also participatory in this, right? We have the open border kind of policy. We're allowing this to happen to ourselves, and that's something that has never, as far as I know, ever happened in the world before.
Yeah, and I don't know the we bit because we never voted on
Well, exactly.
bringing all these
Yeah.
people in. It really never happened that way. And in fact, the people are really opposed to that sort of thing. So, I don't know how much it's a suicide that we're doing or it's more of a murder, but it's happening to our people. So, yeah, I think eventually, though, that again, nationalism is natural. So, I think eventually it'll go into that direction.
So you see a resurgence of that. How do you see things playing out here in the future years? And we could, just speculate a little bit here. It would be interesting as well because I've been thinking about this as well. Is there any way to undo, if you will, the damage that has been done at this stage? And I mean, hopefully in
Oh yeah,
50
of course,
years, yeah.
yeah. I mean, I was just in a, I don't know how old you are, I'm an older guy though, but it's like I grew up at a time that said, oh, the Soviet Union is always going to be around. They're all powerful. They're not going to collapse. The United States will fall first. And I'm like, oh, really? And like, yeah, you know how many tanks they have, Ramsey Paul, compared to us? I'm like, no, a lot more. And this and that. And I'm like, okay. And there's this whole big thing about the nuke battle would happen. And we're 1 minute from midnight. The scientists told us we're all going to die soon. This was back in the early 80s. It never happened. And then the Soviet Union fell apart because no one really believed in it. It was a corrupt system. And I think the United States, or at least this whole cultural Marxist system, not just the United States, I think Britain that way, and maybe Sweden too, it's kind of will eventually implode on itself because people don't support it. And once the finance falls apart, then the people will break apart. Already the United States is no longer a cohesive nation. We're different people. We have like more of the Hispanics, we have kind of the white group, and then we have the Africans. It's kind of like the three different groups. And eventually I see that just kind of naturally splitting apart. Actually, the first place that's going to happen, our Quebec is going to be the Southwest, like California and New Mexico and so forth, where the Hispanics, I believe, are going to want to be quasi-independent. And I think Washington will be so weak at that time, they'll buy into that quasi-independence. They'll make the official language Spanish and so forth. So I
Wow.
think we're already going to see the breaking apart, just like the Soviet Union broke apart. I think the United States will one day break apart, which I support because I think that'd be healthier. So.
Right, kind of back to the secession kind of things or breaking off into different colonies and people living with whom they want to live with, right? Again, because all of this is something that's been enforced, not democratically decided by people that haven't been part of this process. And why shouldn't they have the right to want to live with whom they want to live with, right?
Yeah, because Washington has guns, they'll put a bullet in our head. That's the only reason right now why it doesn't
Yeah,
happen.
that's
But
right.
once Washington gets weak and it loses this financial control, which I think it will eventually happen, the federal government won't be able to hold it all together. I mean, that's the same thing that holds the Soviet republics. I mean, what kept the Ukraine and this, the Soviet Union? Tanks, right? And that's the only thing that's going to keep our states together is the threat of force. Once that threat of force is diminished or not taken seriously, then you'll see the break apart. Again, I think that's going to start in the Southwest with a kind of Aztlan or Hispanic Republic that's kind of quasi-independent.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting development. I wonder what will happen in Europe as well. It's really densely populated there. It seems like the cities are developing into these different kinds of zones, though. I think I read an article yesterday about, I think it was 600,000 British people had you know, fled out of London basically in the last, if it was the last few years or something like that. And it's like, it's they're trying to so hard to achieve something, and then that's just not, it's just not working, you know, it's just not happening for them in that regard that they wanted to. And so the question is, what will happen in these, in these you know, city, are we giving those up? Are we leaving this to in the hands of someone else? I remember going through, sorry, just another personal note on this. I remember going through Antwerp in Belgium and Brussels as well, and that was a surprise to me, because I had no idea how the conditions were in Antwerp and how many immigrants there were in there, and it was basically these beautiful European, you know, buildings and its old architecture style, but the people were complete, it was just Muslims everywhere. And it was just such a bizarre image to have and to see, and just like, wow, what is happening? This is bizarre. Are we leaving this up and just kind of handing it over, or how do you view this, Ramsey?
I don't know. I mean, things can change so quickly, and the back and forth of how the migrations of people. So it's hard to say long term. I think in the long term there's going to be more nationalism. I think in Europe, right, already you're seeing a resurgence of Nationalist Party. I mean, whenever you think nationalist, people always think, unfortunately, the Nazis, but it's much
that, yeah,
you know, I mean, was it Britain, UKIP, they're very popular now. And when I was in Hungary, Jobbik is the third most popular organization right now. They're very nationalistic. And I think the National Front in France, there's a lot of nationalist organizations that in many Europeans, states are becoming a lot more popular. So I see that is becoming more and more as people, you know, get pushed, their backs pushed to the wall. Because in the United States, the white response has always been, really, despite the propaganda, non-aggressive. It's been flight. And flight's not aggressive, right? That's what happened in Detroit. It became unlivable for whites to live there and their kids at school because they would be attacked. So they didn't really fight back. They just fled and they went to the suburbs. And that's how that situation developed. But once people are no longer able to flee anywhere, that's when I think you're going to see a lot of changes. Because most people, they don't want conflict. They just want to get away from it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I linked up a couple of videos there in terms of some of the areas in Germany and in France, and the native kids there were they were regularly beaten up by the Muslims, the younger kids there and the teenagers there, and it was just horrible seeing this. And I don't understand how people reason when people are actually defending this. You know, they're justifying it in some delusional way. They're making, like, you know, rational somersaults around this stuff and thinking, you know, oh no, whatever, it's your fault, it's the native Europeans' fault, they're doing something wrong. It's like, this is violence against them because of the fact that they happen to be, you know, German or French or Swedish or whatever it is. You know, this is horrible. Absolutely.
Yeah,
horrible.
A lot of those people are just cowards. They're hoping that if they get on their knees, they won't be a victim. But that's not how it works. If you've ever been in school with bullies, being a coward doesn't reduce it. And a lot of these people, I think that, oh, if we just, you know, say we also hate white people, even though we're whites, maybe they'll leave us alone. No luck, guy. That's not going to happen. So, but I think part of it is for that reason.
Oh, boy.
But the good thing about it, I see with the former Soviet countries, is they've kept a lot of their identity. I was surprised in Hungary, it's still Hungarians primarily. So it's kind of nice to see.
Well, exactly. It's a good point. I hate to see the battle between Russia and Ukraine right now. There's like, right. they're brothers and sisters there. They shouldn't be fighting with each other. Of course, they do have a long history of a lot of back and forth, specifically how Ukraine was treated under the communist rule and the, you know, the Holodomor and all that kind of stuff, right? The awful starvations that occurred there back in 1933. So there is a lot of antagonism there. But nonetheless, I hate seeing that, actually. It's horrible.
Yeah, that's a lot of the nationalism too. It's more than just racial. And when I went to Europe, that really struck home with me, because I didn't realize how deep it still is, how many people, at least in that area, still honestly hate Russians because of 1956 and, you know, that whole history there.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of resentment still there that I found surprising, being an American, but it's still real that they, there's, because of the history being under the Soviet rule.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in a little bit here, we're going to begin to round things up for this time. It's very interesting to have you here, Ramsey Paul, talking about some of these issues. Of course, difficult subjects, of course, and they needs to be addressed, though, because we are having a problem in the Western world, and we have been driven by ideologues who are completely delusional in terms of what they wanted to achieve, or rather, they might have actually had that. It might be a conspiracy, and they actually want to see the destruction of the West. If you begin to look at things, of course, like the Frankfurt School and some of these kind of ideologies out of there, the very conscious destruction of the West have been part of their motivating factors for a long time. So there has been this agenda, and I think that we've been seeing that playing out now for the last few years here, really, when it's been ramped up. So you have that component there, the real, you know, antagonistic relationship towards Europe, and again, because of its past, it needs to be, you know, destroyed, basically, right? That's kind of what you have going there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's there's two forms of Marxism. There's a revolutionary form, and then there's a cultural Marxism. And now our greatest threat really is the culture, how they went through our culture, and not so much the revolutionary anymore. So it's, they went through our universities first, and they got into the media, and now they got pretty much total control of it all.
Yeah, but hopefully not for long, then. We have to try to keep pushing on these issues and actually try to bring some stability back to the world again. And this is complete insanity in trying to do things a different way from now on, because it's just too much. I believe, though, that people, as long as it goes, I don't want to have a defeatist attitude, which is necessarily the worse it gets, the better it's going to be in a way either. But at the same time, I guess that's kind of one of the ways that this is going to unfold, that people will see how absurd it is. And you know, therefore they'll begin to wake up to it and realize it. But more importantly, as you said before, I think it's about controlling that dialogue and actually, you know, turning some of these ideas back on them instead, and saying, you know, this is ridiculous, making fun of it, just joke about it, control the, get into movies and art and film and everything else, and control the debate a little bit more, and try to be part of that. And I think that a lot of people have been quiet for way too long, and then it's time for them to begin to speak up about this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And the truth is a powerful weapon. So I think we have that on our side. So that's a good thing to have.
Exactly. Definitely. I agree. All right. Well, great having you here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Give us your website again one more time here.
Yeah. If people can find me, Ramsey Paul, RamzPaul. It's just www.ramzeypaul.com. Or if you just type in Google Ramsey Paul, I'm sure you'll see all sorts of naughty things about me. You'll see my YouTube address. So,
good stuff.
Yeah, so if people can find me easy, that's for sure. So, yeah, I like to have people subscribe. It's great. And again, it doesn't take too long to watch my videos. I keep them pretty short. So.
Short and sweet. And a lot of funny stuff in there, guys. So do check it out, RamzeePaul.com or YouTube.com/RamzeePaul. We're going to have these linked up there. So, okay, well, thank you so much, Ramsey. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. We have much more coming up with Paul Craig Roberts, Israel Shamir, Frank Salter, Radio 314 this Wednesday. We also have Dan Park, the street artist from Sweden, who was dragged off to jail for his art. And then we have Harry Cooper from Shark Hunters to talk about the escape of Hitler to Argentina. And of course, many more coming on after that. In the meantime, we say thank you for listening, and of course, a special thanks to all our members for joining us on the members' website. Have a great rest of your day or evening, and we will talk more soon. Take care.